C1G.
Number 1B.
All right. What does she say in those passages now where she speaks about the science of creation? One point is that science of creation has to do with that all is mind and its idea. Ideas. All is mind and its ideas. Therefore, we must be prepared, really, to see that the science of creation has nothing to do with explaining evolution, has nothing to do with explaining where man comes from or mortals come from or anything like that. That the only creation, actually, the only creation of reality there is, has to do with the divine mind, and that divine mind knows nothing but ideas, and therefore only generates ideas. So that if you begin to understand the generation of ideas from the point of view of the divine mind, that will build up within our consciousness, really, the law of creative ability. The law of creative unfoldment and creative achievement. Is this science that which Jesus really knew? And Mrs. Eddy says, yes, the science of creation, so conspicuous in the birth of Jesus. So she could see that science of creation was working on the level of humanity and materiality as the birth of the corporeal Jesus, the birth of Jesus. You see at once that if we would understand or are going to understand, and I hope we are going to understand Genesis as a science of ideas, as an ordered development of science of ideas, that is going to determine also the creative unfoldment on every level of human experience, just as it was in Jesus' experience. But not only that it was conspicuous in the birth of Jesus, but also inspired his wisest and least understood sayings. Can you see? It translated itself right down to the level of human teaching, though she said it was that which was least understood. Think of it, we have a textbook with the chapter Genesis since 100 years, and it is that chapter which is least understood still among Christian scientists. They don't know what to do with it. They just feel it's a nice explanation or a interpretation that God is the creator, but they would never have found that it presents the fundamental law of creation that rules the whole world, that rules eternity, and that rules on every level of experience. So it inspired his wisest and least understood sayings. Furthermore, and was the basis of his marvelous demonstrations. Can you see? That science that is presented it as a science of creation was operating in the birth of Jesus on a very material human level, because Mary knew something about that science of creation. It operated in his teaching, in his wisest sayings, and it operated in his demonstrations. Therefore, though we will see that chapter Genesis doesn't tell us explicitly something about healing, it is one of the highest methods of healing. It is just so that here in this chapter, Mrs. Eddy didn't translate it also right down to the basis of demonstration and showing how it heals, because she has shown that before the healing method, but now she lifts thought up to a higher level, and we'll see what that higher level is, the higher level which inspired not only his wisest words, but also gave him a better basis, or the basis of his marvelous demonstrations. And I hope I don't forget at the end of the chapter to come back to this and show you, after we have gone through the chapter, how we can really take in that science of creation in our consciousness, and that that is a wonderful way of treatment, a much higher way than the treatment of argumentation, the treatment of affirmation of truth and denying error and things like that, that it lifts us right out of a metaphysical application in, onto a level of science itself, on a scientific level of healing. So, we have seen that science of creation, as Mrs. N uses it, is based on all is mind, and mind's ideas, that on that basis Jesus' whole experience was based, his birth, his teaching, his demonstration. Further, what does Mrs. Eddy mean, really, by that science of creation as a scientific process? Does she give any indication how that science would say something about the ordered development of a creative ability? We can pick up that subject in miscellaneous writings, where she says the following thing. In its generating process, which is a generating process. You see, a generating process is that you start somewhere and that pushes you on to a next stage, and that pushes you on to a next step. It generates itself. As she says, in its genesis, the science of creation is stated in mathematical order. Here she gives the key, what we have to look out, for what we have to look out, namely to an order, that the science of creation is not just a statement, but that it is presenting an order, not just any kind of order, an order that is so exact and irreversible as a mathematical order, beginning with the lowest form, and what does it do? Ascending the scale of being up to man. Therefore, she gives us the key and says, this science of creation fundamentally will show us a generating law. That generating law starts at the lowest point, but it ascends step by step by step by step higher. And we'll see afterwards tomorrow how this very point is repeated over and over and over in the chapter on Genesis, and is showing us really that, or preparing, so to say, our thought, that we say we must become acquainted with a law that shows us how from one point we are led to the next point and not to another point, how one leads to two, and two leads to three, and three leads to four, and four to five, and that we cannot jump from one to three, and from three to seven, and so on. This is what we'll see as we go through Genesis. Okay. Now, having seen that the science of creation with its mathematical order of idea is the main subject of this chapter, we can ask ourselves also, what is the place value of Genesis within the 16th chapter of the structure of the textbook? We know that the structure is built up through four chapters of the Word, without going into further details, through four chapters of the Word. In those four chapters of the Word, Mrs. Eddy shows how we can approach, it's the approach, how we can approach God as He is. Then the second four chapters have the great tone of the Christ. Those four chapters show then how God translates Himself to the point of idea, translates itself to the point of body and physiology, translates itself to the point of consciousness in the chapter Footsteps of Truth. So it gives a great sense that once we have approached God in an ordered way through the four chapters, that then God comes to us, translates itself to us, to the point of idea. Once she has shown that, then she takes up that subject at the point of idea and shows in the third four chapters, beginning with creation and ending with a chapter on practice, that she shows then what is the realm of idea and how that realm of idea is dealing with the realm of illusions and the realm of beliefs. How ideas are that bring illusions and beliefs to the point of disappearance. Well, if those beliefs disappear and only ideas are left, then the field is ready, thought is ready, for the last four chapters on science. And the last four chapters on science therefore want to show us that an idea is always in its principle, that principle and idea is one. And that's the climax of the structure of the textbook. So you can see it leads thought from the point of view of prayer, leads thought to God, the Word chapters, and prepares us so that God can come to us and abide with us, the Christ chapter. That opens up a new universe, a new creation, ninth chapter, and Signs of Being, the tenth chapter, opens up a new universe, namely a universe of ideas, and that in that universe of ideas, the universe of beliefs and illusions yield to that universe of idea. But still, that's not the end of it. The fourth chapter, the last fourth chapter, science, then show us that these ideas were never separate from its principle, and they were always principle and idea one. So Genesis, that is, in that last four chapters, has the place value of what? It is science reflecting Christianity. Because what have we seen as we went through the preceding chapters? We have seen science, the science chapter, start with teaching Christian science, chapter on teaching Christian science. What does that show? It shows how we come to the oneness with principle by strict adherence to principle. That was the great subject in teaching. That it was all a demand that we should adhere, therefore to be one with the divine principle, never give up and never yield in. Then, when through teaching Christian science we can see that we are one with principle, and that principle is one with us, then recapitulation can come and say that science has a Christ, namely that science presents itself through the Christ of a science. What is a Christ of a science? The Christ of a science is that the principle explains itself through a system, So recapitulation, as we have seen last year, presents that principle through its system. It was laid out, as you remember, very systematically as Word, Christ, Christianity, and science operating within their own realms. We don't have to repeat that. But then, when we have touched that we have seen, oh God, it is so that principle always interprets itself and comes to man as a system of divine ideas, then we come to Genesis, and where we see, but principle includes that system. Principle includes the idea and embraces the idea. And so we will see in Genesis how the principle of creation always operates, to say, within itself, never without, never producing a creation outside of principle, but always within its own being. So that at this point we get really Genesis as principle, including the universal idea. And you can see that even that cannot be the highest altitude of consciousness, that there must be even higher than that, namely that principle is just principle operating as a principled idea. It not even has to include a universe. The principle is one, and this is the infinite one, and therefore only always operates as its own idea. And that is shown in Apocalypse. We'll do that next year. A wonderful chapter where we then see that. So, can you see that the place value here of Genesis is within the structure of Genesis, within the structure of the textbook, that it shows principle and idea as one at the point where principle includes its own creation. So there is no creation going on outside of principle, as if God would project outwards a creation and says, there is the creation. It is much more showing how principle is constantly restructuring itself, renewing itself. Actually, we could say it is a God Genesis. God constantly generating himself as what he is. Always generating itself in an ordered way, in a systematic way, in an irreversible way, and in this way we get a terrific sense of Genesis, and therefore of that all-inclusiveness of being. We come to the scriptural notes, and first to the first scriptural note. This is the most interesting scriptural note, because it is from Exodus 6:3, but the preceding verse that is not printed here, we find the following statement, and that is important to know. It says, "And God, Elohim, spake unto Moses and said unto him, I am Jehovah." And then comes the verse that we have here, "And I, Elohim, appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of God Almighty. But by my name Jehovah was I not known to them." Now, the student of Christian Science, who is not a very good student of the Bible, he will have difficulty at this point. Because as a student of the textbook, and especially of Genesis, he knows that Mrs. Eddy defines Jehovah in a rather derogatory way, because she says that Jehovah is the God of war and of vengeance. He's a tribal God. He punishes and curses. He's a final national deity. It's a personal name of the God of Israel. You can see it's a very low sense of God, that Jehovah. And therefore, when we read this scriptural note, we are a bit shocked, because we say, well, and I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name God Almighty, which is very big, God Almighty. Actually, the original means is there El Shaddai. That's God Almighty. El Shaddai, which means the bountiful, the giver of all, the supplier of all. But by my name Jehovah was I not known to them. And so you feel, all right, well, they didn't know that tribal God, that God of vengeance and war and so on. But that is not meant here. It would not really indicate, as a scriptural note, really the tonality of that chapter. What we must know is naturally something about the Bible and about the biblical names for God. And so I just quickly try to epitomize what we should know. We should know that the Bible is composed of, or is composed by taking various old documents. Say, the primitive document was the oldest one, around about 850 BC. That was a primitive document, also called the Jehovistic document, because God there was called Jehovah. And there God behaved the way as Mrs. Eddy describes him. There he was in that document, he was really that God of war and vengeance and a finite national deity. But the Bible as we have it is composed not only of this primitive or Jehovistic document, but also of the Elohistic document, in which God was called Elohim, and that document was written about 100 years later, about 750 BC. And we have another document, the Deuteronomy, that was written and discovered about 100 years later, around about 650 BC, before the Babylonian captivity. In Babylonian captivity, the priests, or it may have been some of the prophets, we do not know exactly, the priests rearranged the Bible by taking in all those documents and adding their concept of the history of Israel and their concept of God. It was called the priestly document. And the priestly document used the term Elohim and the term Jehovah, both, but from a different standpoint. And this is the difficulty which we encounter here. What really this verse wants to bring out is that Elohim, first of all I have to say the following, that this verse comes from the priestly document, and not from the Elohistic document, and not from the Jehovistic document, though it explains something about Jehovah. Namely, that it says, I, Elohim, Elohim was a spiritual concept of God, I appeared unto Abraham and unto Isaac and to Jacob as the God, by the name of God Almighty, by the name of El Shaddai, by the name of the bountiful, the giver, and he was really bountiful and giver to those patriarchs. And then comes the but. The but also always must show something higher. And so it's shown, but by my name, Jehovah, was I not known unto them. Indicating that there is a higher sense of God than the tribal sense of God of Abraham, God of Jacob, God of Isaac, and so on, that there is an impersonal name of God, and that more powerful impersonal name in the priestly document, not in the Jehovistic document, is really the I am that I am. Right before this verse, we have in chapter 3, we have that revelation to Moses that God presents himself as the I am that I am. Meaning what? Because the Hebrew had no tenses in their language. They didn't have a past tense nor a future tense, but one tense only. Therefore, that meant really, I am what I was, I am what I am, I am what I always will be, from everlasting to everlasting. That was the new name that was given. And that verse in which they introduced the new term, I am that I am, is from a later addition, so that they could build a bridge from the old concept of the El Shaddai concept as the giver of everything, and this is important to see afterwards, to the point of seeing that God is not just the giver of everything, but that he is the being of everything, which is a great difference. Because then we begin to understand what the chapter on Genesis wants to show, that he is not just the giver, the creator, because that has been shown in the chapter on creation, but that he is the I am that I am. I am Jehovah. I am that which I am and ever will be. And so we must see this great difference in order to see the whole problem that will be brought out, namely the problem in Genesis is, how is it possible that being is the beingness of being, and at the same time that being is becoming the signs of generation? And on this great point, around this great point turns everything in that chapter on Genesis. Okay, tomorrow we'll go on.